Inside the Law, talk radio for the Jersey Shore.
Good morning, Monmouth and Ocean County, and to those listening in on the Internet. I'm Douglas Hull from the law firm of Novi & Associates. We're the law firm that specializes in elder law, which includes asset protection, Medicaid planning, guardianships, trust and estate planning, administration, and litigation. And you're listening to Inside the Law on 1160 WOBM AM in Ocean County and 1310 AM in Monmouth County, and available around the world on WOBMAM.com. And you know the format. Each week we take you, the listeners, inside the law to learn about an issue or a topic of interest. Today we'll be covering the second part in our What is a Fiduciary series. And today we're going to be dealing with executors. Today my guest is Catherine Farley, who is Vice President and Senior Wealth Advisor at Ocean First Bank. We'll be discussing what is an executor and why do you need one, the duties of an executor, and who to name as your executor. Now, should you have any questions about the issues that are being discussed today or any other legal questions, we encourage you to call in. As you heard, the call-in number is 732-505-1160. Our sound engineer today is Lauren, and she'll help to get you on the air. So as I indicated, Kathy Farley is my guest, and good morning, Kathy. How are you?
Good morning, Doug. Thank you for having me. I'm fine.
That's great. Kathy, before we get into the topic, can you just indicate to our listeners a little bit about, Ocean First and, your role within the organization?
Certainly. Ocean First Bank is a community-based bank in Monmouth, Ocean, and Middlesex counties. We have been in the area since 1902. We have 24 branches. Our wealth management division, established in 1999, is located right off Route 70 and 571 in Manchester, New Jersey. We can act in the capacity of an estate executor or trust administrator. We manage money for individuals and non-for-profits.
Great. Now, Kathy, as I indicated to our listeners, we're going to be talking about what is an executor and the roles and functions of an executor. I guess starting off with the basic point, what is an executor?
Good question. What is an executor? An executor plays a fiduciary role, as you indicated earlier. That's the topic. This is the second series of this topic. Fiduciary role to settle someone's estate.
And why does a person, need an executor?
Well, an executor will be the individual handling your finances after you've passed on, someone who will probate your will, someone who will manage your assets, conserve your assets, and make distributions to all your designated beneficiaries.
Okay. And Kathy made a very, important point there. That the executor is somebody who is named in the will. Sometimes people may hear the term that so-and-so is the administrator of my estate, particularly in some other states, they may hear the term that so-and-so is the personal representative of my estate. An administrator is someone who handles the estate, but who was not named in the will. So the court will come in and will appoint someone or some entity to serve as the administrator. As I indicated, in some other states, they kind of don't use the terms executor and administrator. They have a general generic term of personal representative, and that can cover either of those roles. One thing that I would just like to stress is that a person who makes a will has the ability to name an executor, and that is a very important decision to make. Now, Kathy, in kind of a summary fashion, you talked about the the duties of an executor to handle the estate. But can you get into some of the specific issues that a person, that an executor, you know, would handle?
Certainly, Doug. Thank you. I believe we should probably first talk about probating someone's will.
Good point.
And the process thereof. You and I both know in New Jersey it's a very simple process, very streamlined. It's a matter of going to the probate court in the county in which you live and filling out the proper paperwork and walking away with a surrogate certificate, which gives you the job and the authority to go out and manage the estate.
And I think two very important, you know, aspects of what you just mentioned is the first is that the fact that a person is named as an executor in somebody's will in and of itself doesn't give
them the right. Absolutely
give them
right.
Any power.
Not at all. Not at all. A lot of times that you hear, well, I'm the person's spouse. I should be able to do this.
Right.
And unfortunately, by law, that is not the case.
Until you go down to the surrogate's office, fill out the papers, and they issue that nice little piece of paper with the seal on it, the person or the entity does not have any power, you know, to act.
I think it's interesting to note here, Doug, that many times I get the question, you know, I don't want to have to probate my husband's will. I don't want to have to probate my will, have anyone probate my will. I want to avoid probate. And again, I go back to the point where it's a very streamlined and simple and cost-effective process.
In New Jersey.
Absolutely. Maybe not in Florida, but that's a whole another topic for a whole another day.
Right, because more times than I care to count over the years, I've had people come in and I want to do this, this, and this because I'm told I should avoid the cost of probate. And my first question will always be, did somebody from Florida tell you to do that?
I always ask them, tell me why. And usually the reason is it's expensive, it's time-consuming, and I just don't want to go there.
Okay. Kathy, I believe we have our first caller. Good morning, Sophie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine today. Thank you.
Great.
I have a question. My cousin is the executor of her mom's estate, and she's pretty much followed the terms in the will and taken care of things. But how do we know when she's completely finished? Is there something she needs to do to finalize the estate?
She's already, you know, handled all of the bill paying and tax returns and all that good stuff?
Yes, she has.
Has okay. The taxing authorities sent clearance letters indicating that they've accepted the returns as filed?
I don't know if it's gone that far, but she's just waiting. She just wants to know when she can disperse the money and, you know, is there anything else she has to do when she does that?
Okay. It was Sophie, right?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to be sure. Are you going to be listening to the rest of the show?
I hope to, yes. It's
okay.
Very interesting.
Well, we're going to be talking about some of the specific, things that the executor handles. So we'll be covering those. But let me just try to very quickly address your point, and we'll cover this in greater detail. Kind of at the end, assuming all of the intermediate steps have occurred, the last two things that generally happen is that the executor has an obligation to satisfy the beneficiaries as to the amount that they're meant to be receiving, and this might be done by an accounting, or it might be done in a
statement form, in a
more streamlined fashion, but that has to be done. And there is a document called a refunding bond and release, which must be prepared, submitted to the beneficiaries, signed by all of the beneficiaries before any beneficiary receives their distribution. And, you know, a little bit later on in the show, we'll be explaining the full, ramifications of this refunding bond and release.
Mm-hmm. And where do you get this bond from? Do you have Do you have an attorney draw it up, or is it online somewhere?
Well, you know, certainly in our office, if we're representing an estate, we prepare it. I believe the refunding bond and release form may be available through the surrogate's office. I'm not positive. And if it's available on the internet, it's unknown to me because we have no need to search it there.
I can't answer that question either, Sophie. I do know at Ocean First Bank Wealth Management, we use the Scrivener of the will to prepare these documents.
Okay. So basically at that point, she needs to retain someone, to hire someone to complete the process.
I would say yes, unless she is really satisfied that she knows what she's doing. Because this refunding bond and release form is very, very important to her to protect her down the road.
It is a protective mechanism down the road in the event that there's a need to go back to the beneficiaries and collect some of the distributed funds to pay an unknown tax that rears its ugly head, or there's an unknown bill that comes into play down the road. The document needs to be properly prepared and the proper language be in that document.
All right. Well, I will listen to the rest of your show to get more information, and I appreciate your answer to our question.
Not a problem, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, Sophie.
Thank you.
Okay.
You-
Bye-bye. That was a very, you know, good question, but I was just, you know, hoping to address the wrap-up of the estate, if you will, kind of a little bit later, you know, in our show. Now, given the, you know, some of the obligations that the executor has, Kathy, what are some of the important things a person has to consider when trying to determine who they want as their executor?
Great question. When you sit with an individual and you're going through the process of discussing how they might want their will prepared and set up, one of the questions, somebody that you trust financially, somebody that has the time to put into the process of settling your estate. That could be a family member, several family members, a trusted advisor, an attorney, or a bank that has a trust department. The reason I say that you have multiple choices is because families, when you appoint a family members have moved on, passed on down the road, and you might want to appoint someone as a secondary or a contingent. And that contingent person might be a grandchild if they're of age or a trusted advisor. So there's many facets to the decision-making process. And I guess the takeaway here is always have a backup plan for someone to act as your executor.
No, that's certainly, you know, true. You know, I think as we talk about the various tasks that the executor has, the listeners will hopefully see the importance of selecting an executor who is
fiscally responsible,
trustworthy, stable, hopefully, you know, pretty organized, and is, you know, motivated and dedicated to carrying out
your wishes and
the person's wishes.
Absolutely, that's very important.
You really don't want to name somebody who going into it thought that your estate plan was not a particularly wise one, didn't like it. May not get along with
your family members.
With the family members, and you can see the battle, you know, coming down the road. Now, Kathy, you indicated that in selecting an executor, it's possible for a person to name more than one.
And co-executors, absolutely. It can be, you know, two children, brother and sister, you can name a corporate fiduciary and a family member. So they work in conjunction. One person can't make a move without the other. There's some checks and balances there. And I think that's a very good way to proceed if you have some concerns that this family member might not be able to wrap up all the duties or may need some assistance.
And one other thing that I know I have encountered over the years is that sometimes a person, you know, will select multiple either people or, as you indicated, maybe one person from the family to who may be very, very familiar with the family background and the family dynamics, and then might also select a corporate fiduciary for the higher level of expertise that they have. But one important thing is that these co-executors be able to interact amicably. You really don't, in the interest of checks and balances, want to name two executors that you know are going to be butting heads from day one.
Well, we've all seen that, and when you and I sit down and speak with our clients, you know, one of the questions that's always asked of me is, well, I don't want to insult my children. I want them to work together. We all know what, you know, financially, family members, sometimes money does strange things to families, and you really want to think smartly when you make that choice and have the conversation beforehand with that individual and let them know why you're making this choice.
Right, and as you had indicated, you also want to, you know, be cognizant of you know, the attributes of the person that you're considering. While this doesn't so much pertain to an executor directly, but it certainly would if you were naming a trustee or a guardian or for somebody. It's really not a great idea to name an individual who might be, you know, 88 years old, and giving them the task of handling the estate for a relatively young person who is more than likely going to outlive that person. You want to, you know, take those various, you know, factors, you know, into account.
You got to have the forethought. What's going to happen down the road? You know, what is the contingency plan? Certainly that 88-year-old might be able to handle things right now, but the backup plan, as we spoke of a little bit earlier, is always something that needs to be thought carefully through.
You know? Now, Kathy, I mentioned the term, you know, trustee. And as a matter of fact, I believe in 2 weeks, Jason Wyatt from our office is going to be doing the third part of this series and dealing with the powers and duties of a trustee. But how do you distinguish between the role of an executor and the role of a trustee?
The executor is the individual who, when you pass away, is in charge of settling your estate. And your estate, we can talk a little bit about, you know, what your estate consists of, anything that's in your name individually, such as maybe your residence, bank accounts, jewelry, artwork, incidentals, not only protecting them, valuing them, but also distributing them to your heirs as indicated. Sometimes an heir is a trust for various reasons. So not only do you need to name an executor, but who is going to be the trustee of a trust you might create for, let's say, a minor child, a disabled person, a child that might not be fiscally responsible. Who is going to be that trustee? Someone who, again, similar traits as an executor, fiscally responsible, able to be hands-on with that individual, and has the ability to do the tax work, the investment work, and have a relationship with that individual.
Okay. Yeah. And so the role of the trustee is a much more long-term role, typically,
depending upon the terms of the trust itself that's created under the will. Trust under will, you know, it could be for someone's lifetime. It could be for a period of time. It could be until a minor turns 25, depending upon, you know, how you choose to write this trust. It can be a very long-term process.
Because, you know, I know I will occasionally get contacted by a person who is talking about an estate where, you know, the executor is still serving as executor, and it's been 13 years, you know, since the person's passing, and I'll usually start by saying, are you sure we're talking about an executor? Because typically an estate is not open for 13 years.
Well, it all depends on what's going on dynamically underneath it all, right? We've all seen that.
So that's usually indicative of the fact that there is some ongoing, problem, or there could be a situation where the executor
hasn't wrapped things up,
hasn't done the job very well. Now, Kathy, can you just indicate to our listeners some of the reasons that a person might select a corporate fiduciary rather than a family member or a close friend or something of that nature?
I certainly can. First and foremost, I would say, look for a family member, look for an individual. And if you, for some reason, that person isn't in your life, isn't available, children get scattered today. We're not all close-knit anymore within the same neighborhoods. I had a situation where an individual who lived in Ocean County had two sons. One lived in Thailand. One lived in California. There was absolutely zero communication. And she said, what am I going to do? She was a widow since she was 48. And a corporate fiduciary such as Ocean First Bank was the perfect fit for that because we provide the estate settlement services. We have been doing so for many, many years. We have the expertise to do the asset gathering, asset protection, sale of a residence, all the tax work, all the investment work. So we do this as a business 24/7, 365.
And, I think that raises, a very important point. There is a law in the state of New Jersey called the Prudent Investor Act. And there are a number of statutes which are, laws generated by our legislature that deal with the powers of an executor or a trustee or a guardian, any of those roles, what their duties are, and the like. But the Prudent Investor Act, is a piece of legislation that's designed to protect estates and beneficiaries of estates by imposing certain standards that apply to the investment of assets of an estate. And one of the things that courts will consider if forced to rule on these decisions is whether the executor followed the appropriate standard of care. And for an individual, the standard of care is what a reasonably prudent person would do under the same circumstances. So the law doesn't require that an executor be foolproof, that they be clairvoyant, and things of that nature, but it does require that they would act as prudently and carefully and reasonably as a similarly informed person. However, if you have a corporate fiduciary such as Ocean First, they then have an enhanced standard because, as Kathy indicated, they do this 24/7. They do this as a profession. So the court kind of expects more of them.
Holds us to a higher standard, absolutely.
Right.
And I think it's important to note here too, in settling an estate, it's not so much about making investments; it's more about protecting what's in the estate, preserving what's in the estate, and doing the right thing. And our standard of fiduciary duty to the beneficiaries, making sure the beneficiaries receive their proper share. It's not really an investment process at all. It's just gathering up the assets, protecting them, and using our higher level of standard to make sure those assets are safe and secure.
Okay. Kathy, thank you for that answer. And we have a lot of additional information we're going to cover. But at this point, we're going to be taking a short break, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and we're going to be continuing with our topic of what is an executor, why do you need one, and what are some of the duties of the executor. But before we get back to that, just like to remind our listeners that if anyone listening is a member of a civic group or organization and is interested in having come and speak to your group, please contact our office at 732-657-0600, and we'll certainly be happy to try to set something up. I'd like to also remind you that if you have any questions that you would like to have answered on the show, and we read your question and answer it, you will receive a $50 gift certificate to an area restaurant. Those inquiries can either be directed to us by telephone at the 732-657-0600 number. They can be sent by mail to our office at 2915 Ridgeway Road in Manchester, New Jersey, and that's 08759. They can also be sent on our website, which is www.novilaw.com. We also have a Monmouth County office, which is on an appointment-only basis, and that's at the Brook 35 Plaza in Seagirt. Okay. Now, Kathy, getting back, to our questions, and if we have any callers that would like to call in and give questions that they have, the call-in number is 732-505-1160. But some of the things that people may wish to consider, one is if I have named somebody under my will as my executor, and I decide I wish to make a change, or I think I might need to make a change, how do I go about doing that?
Well, as an attorney, you probably are fully aware that they can make the change very simply through the use of drafting a codicil, naming a new executor, or even a contingent executor, backup plan, or it might be a good opportunity for the individual if their will has not been looked at for several years with the new tax laws that have been enhanced. They might want to come in and have their document totally redrawn so it's suitable towards their particular situation.
Right. Now, Kathy, we usually tell our listeners that that we recommend that they at least look at their will. Maybe not change it, because maybe it doesn't need to be, but at least look at the will every 3 to 5 years, or if something significant happens in their life.
We do the same thing every 3 years, or if there's a birth, a death, an inheritance, if you move to a different state, if there's been a divorce or a disability. Those are always key reasons to say, aha, maybe I need to revisit this.
Right. Now, if an executor dies, that could be one of the incidents that you were just referring to, and it brings up the point of, well, how was my will drafted in the first place? We certainly encourage people when they come in to have their will done to not only name an initial executor or co-executor, but to then have maybe one or two alternate or contingent executors who would take over in the event that the initially named person or organization, more so the person, passed away or became unable to serve because of lack of capacity or whatever. So this way you have the alternate in place and maybe even an alternate, further, beyond that. Also, sometimes, people will come in and say, well, my executor has moved. So do I need to change it? And, Kathy, what would you tell them?
Where did they move to?
There you go.
Where did you move to? If they moved down the street or into an assisted living, those are two different scenarios. And if the person is in assisted living, they're probably not going to want to be running around collecting your assets and selling your residence if that's the case. But always take a look at the documents. See, what's the contingency plan? What's the backup plan? You may not need to change your will.
And one thing that I can't stress, I can't overstress, is that if you have something named in your will, whether it be who you named as the executor, what the executor's address is, or whatever, if you should decide that something needs to be changed, please, please, please resist the temptation to grab the original of the will and just handwrite or type the changes onto it, because you would just have invalidated your will and created big problems for your estate down the road. Please have it done properly, whether it be by the codicil that Kathy mentioned, or even, you know, possibly a new will.
Doug, at this point, since we're talking about very important issues like not defacing your will, I think it's important to bring up to the fact that if you have minor children, the will is the only place to name a guardian for those children.
That's absolutely correct. And I've always kind of felt that the guardian of the various fiduciaries that you might name in your will, you know, we've been talking about an executor, we've been talking about a trustee. Kathy just properly brought up the issue of guardian. If you're going to name someone or some entity as a fiduciary in your will, please make sure that they're willing to serve.
Clearly, you know, you have to have the conversations with your children or family members, your trusted advisors, to make sure that they are in the position or of the right mind or truly want to serve.
Right. And you know, if you have a situation where you say, well, you know, I've got a significant estate here, and I want to make sure that it's properly administered, and I heard this wonderful lady talking on the radio one day, and I think I'd like to have this Ocean First bank involved in my estate. Give Kathy or someone else at Ocean First a call. I can tell you right now that their number is 732-240-4500, but give them a call, contact them, speak to them on the phone if it's determined that it's appropriate, get together and meet in person, so that, you know, both sides, are on the same page and you fully know what can be expected here.
Any one of myself or my teammates can meet with you at any one of our 24 offices in Ocean and Monmouth and Middlesex counties. We can also meet at our Manchester facility as well. Pick up the phone, give us a call. Let's have a discussion. You can also reach us on our website, which is www.oceanfirst.com. We welcome your inquiries.
Now, Kathy, we've been talking about the job of an executor. And, you know, the responsibilities, or at least some of the responsibilities that are imposed upon them. The executor is not expected under the law to do this out of the goodness of their heart. How do they determine what is the fair compensation for an executor?
Well, there is a statute in the state of New Jersey that dictates what an executor can charge. Wealth management / trust department can charge that. You, Doug, individually can charge that, or a family member can charge that. And it hasn't changed in the, well, I hate to admit it, 30-plus years I've been in the business. It's 5% on the first 200,000 of probate assets. On the next 800, it's 3.5%, and over a million, it's 2%. And again, you can charge that as an individual, or a corporate fiduciary can charge that.
And in addition to that, if there's any income that comes into the estate during the administration of the estate, the executor is entitled to 6% of that income.
That is correct. And I think it's important to note here, as an individual executor, that fee is considered income to you.
Right. And another important point that Kathy made was that in computing this fee, it's only computed on the probate assets, which are the assets that are covered by the will. So if a person has a $100,000 bank account that is joint between husband and wife, or it's a $100,000 bank account that is payable on death to, Bobby and Billy.
Or life insurance, annuities, all of those.
Those things go to those people because the document says so, not because the will says so.
By contract, right.
And there is no commission, that is taken on the amount of that. Now, Kathy raised another very important point that I'd just like to expand on a little bit, which is that if the executor takes the commission, it is income taxable to that person. It can also be an estate tax deduction for the estate, but sometimes the beneficiary has to executor has to kind of sit down and decide what makes sense. If you have a person who is the sole beneficiary of an estate, it would be foolish for that person
to take the fee
because they're going to get an income tax on it. And if they happen to be, let's say, a child, it will be exempt from the inheritance tax at least. There may be an estate tax, but it would be exempt from the inheritance tax. So they could take it as an inheritance with no tax.
Exactly.
And so why pay income tax on it? These things have to be
carefully considered.
To be, thought out. Now, Kathy, whether it's an individual serving as executor or it is an Ocean First Bank or some other corporate fiduciary, is it typical that an executor might retain the services of professionals to assist?
Absolutely. There's so many things that go on in an estate that we have to consider hiring either an accountant or an attorney. Let's take your typical estate. There's usually a residence that needs to be sold in the state of New Jersey for a closing to take place. It has to take place with an attorney, reviewing the contracts, preparing the closing, and in the case of preparing estate tax returns. We are equipped at Ocean First Bank, but sometimes, we would use the accountant that the individual used or a family might recommend that we use.
Okay. And I think that becomes, very important because while the executor has the obligation to get the estate handled, it's not assumed that the executor has every bit of knowledge necessary to get it done properly. And if they don't, then they should reach out to whatever level of professional they need to get it done right.
I think it's important to exercise our duty of fiduciary care by doing so.
Now Kathy, during the course of the estate administration, do I assume that in a lot of cases, if not all, there is some necessity of the executor to communicate with the beneficiaries?
Sure, and you can help me with this one, Doug. I think the first thing is a notice of probate goes out, right? And that's typically by the attorney representing the estate. After the individual and or the corporate fiduciary qualifies executor, there's a notice of probate, which includes a letter and a copy of the will indicating that person or organization has been named as a beneficiary.
Right, and the notice of probate is required under the court rules, and it just basically tells the beneficiary, and it also is supposed to tell any person who is in what is called an heir at law, so that's somebody who would have inherited the estate in the absence of a will. It tells those people that, look, the will was probated on such and such a day. It was probated in this, you know, surrogate's court. So-and-so qualified as the executor. This is, you know, where you can contact, you know, that person. And then under the court rule, you either provide a copy of the will or you advise the beneficiary that upon request a copy will be provided. In the vast majority of cases, it's a lot easier to just give a copy of the will. You know, often I will get contact by typically by beneficiaries, but sometimes the question comes from the executor saying, well, when do we have the will reading? Now, I've been practicing law in New Jersey since 1974, and in a state administration that entire period, I have never, ever, ever attended a will reading.
I'm curious, is it required in other states and just not New Jersey?
I think it's just something, I don't think it's required, but I think it's something that going back many, many, many years ago used to happen, maybe because back then it was difficult to make copies. You can just run off, you know, as many copies as you need very quickly, mail it, fax it, email it, or whatever. Back then it would have been much more difficult. So they might have gathered the people
family
together and say, okay, everybody, let me read to you what the will is so that you know what it says. But it really doesn't happen, you know, anymore.
But I think the next step too, I can speak from a corporate fiduciary standpoint. When there are beneficiaries, we set them up to receive monthly or quarterly statements showing a detailed statement of activity that we as executor are working through, whether it be paying bills, collecting assets, and paying taxes. And we send those out to the beneficiary so they're fully informed. Sometimes if it's with the charity involved, we send that statement to the Attorney General's office. That's a requirement. Typically, statements are sufficient when you wrap up an estate administration that the beneficiary has been fully informed, and hence the refunding bond and release we spoke about a little bit earlier, is just that the end and the signature would be fine. They've been fully notified of our entire estate administration. In other cases where it might be a little bit more, there might be other dynamics going on, we might want to do what we call an informal accounting, have our entire estate administration process put into a document called an informal accounting and provide that to the beneficiaries along with the refunding bond and release. And in other cases, few and far between in my career, we do a court accounting where we feel it's necessary to get the judge in the probate part of whatever county the decedent passed away and to sign off and say, yes, the executor has done his job properly.
And Kathy, just to follow up on a couple of those points, you talked about sending out the periodic statements. That's certainly something that an Ocean First is much more capable of doing than an individual typically is,
right?
Because most individuals, you know, don't have all this information on
the
computer
systems, right,
that they can systematically just send it out. So it's more difficult for them to send that out. But at some point in time, and Sophie, when she called, was kind of addressing that point in time. At some point in time, after you have made sure that all known bills have been addressed, that all necessary tax returns, which could include income tax returns, inheritance tax, New Jersey estate tax, federal estate tax possibly, that all of those things have been filed, and as you properly pointed out, notification has been received from the taxing authorities that, yep, you have filed, you've paid the appropriate amount.
We accept it as is.
Yeah,
right.
We have no further questions or problems with you. After all of this is done, typically the executor, or if there wasn't a will, the administrator would at that point be in the position of making distribution. Now, the will may have what are called specific bequests, where maybe the person said, I leave $10,000 to, you know, to my nephew, you know, Mary, or to my nephew, Billy. That would be a poor choice of names. My nephew, Billy. All Billy is really entitled to is $10,000 and is really not entitled to know what the estate was all about, because Billy has really no say in it.
No, he doesn't. He's just receiving a gift.
Right. Now, if on the other hand, you have an individual who is entitled to 10% of my estate, or 25%, or whatever the share is, that person is then entitled to know how you arrived at the dollar amount that the executor says constitutes 10% or 25%. Now, Kathy, you know, talked about how Ocean First has the ability, and as a matter of practice does, send out the periodic statement. So the person has had the ability, kind of on a, you know, inning by inning basis, of seeing what is going on financially. So they are hopefully in a position at that point to say, okay, you say I'm entitled to, you know, $86,492.16. And based upon those statements, yep.
Right on the money. Right on the money.
That's what I'm entitled to. And thank you so much. When can I expect my check? If that person is not satisfied with the statements, maybe they haven't been looking at them. They just had the envelopes coming in and they filed them or threw them away or whatever. Or if it was an individual and the individual has not been sending out periodic statements, as Kathy mentioned, it could be an informal accounting. But the executor does have the obligation to satisfy the beneficiaries as to the dollars that are involved in that it is proper.
Correct. And I think it's on an individual's acting as an executor or administrator. Again, when you're going to consider who's going to be your executor, these are all good points. You know, is this person capable of actually preparing this accounting? And if not, do they need to hire an accountant to do so, or a bookkeeper, if you will? And it just prepare all that information. You know, in today's computer world, sometimes you can do that on a computer. But the beneficiaries always have the right to question everything that's being done from an individual acting as an executor as well as a corporate fiduciary.
And Kathy pointed out the relative infrequency of doing a court accounting, and there's a very important reason why. It's expensive. the court charges fees for it, which are based upon the size of the estate and the number of pages in the accounting.
In the accounting, yes. And that can add up, as you know.
Right. And there are attorney's fees involved. So we usually try to do it on an informal basis, and try to, you know, get all the questions answered, you know, et cetera, to avoid those costs. We just have a couple of more minutes, Kathy. So I would just like to deal with the refunding bond and release point that was mentioned before. Can you just kind of indicate to our listeners what the refunding bond and release is?
From a layman's point of view, I would say it's almost as a promise to, I'm accepting my inheritance. I agree to the accounting or periodic statements, and in the event there's a need for me to repay some of this back, I promise to do so. I think that's what it really comes down to.
And you're absolutely right. As our listeners may guess by the term refunding bond and release, there are two parts of it. The release part is the beneficiary saying, if you give me this item or this amount of money, I release you from the obligation to give me anything more. The refunding bond part is the beneficiary saying, if you give me this and a presently unknown but later substantiated debt is presented and is proved to the executor to be appropriate, I will refund my pro rata share of the amount necessary to pay that obligation. This document gets filed with the surrogates court, and it is very important to have it. And Sophie's relatives should know this, because if that creditor comes to the executor after distribution has been made and proves what the debt is and then says, all right, now pay me, and the executor says, well, I'll pay you my pro rata share, but I've distributed it to everybody else and I've gotten a refunding bond and release, then the creditor can go to those various beneficiaries and try to get payment from them. But if they can't, oh, well, that's their problem. If, on the other hand, you don't get the refunding bond and release, the creditor can say to the executor, well, you should have gotten it, and now that you didn't, getting it, it becomes your problem, but I want full payment from
you. You owe us, right. You owe us.
And the executor does not want to put him, her, or itself into that position. The last thing that I just want to very, very quickly mention is three R's, which is renunciation, resignation, and removal. If a person is named as the executor and they don't want to serve, they can renounce. And I see that we've run out of time. I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and we hope you have a great
thank
weekend.
You.
Thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank
bye
you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.